This podcast is brought to you in part by ChoiceRealtyConnect.com. Whether you're buying or selling a home, condo, or any type of property, trust Amanda to help match you with up to three top agents in your area. ChoiceRealtyConnect.com.
Welcome, rock stars from Washington, D.C. This is the Rock on the Money podcast, episode 120. Time to talk about saving, investing, and protecting all of those hard-earned monies. We're here to coach you along that path to retirement and financial independence. I'm Craig, your Dave Ramsey Master Financial Coach, along with Amanda. You are a corporate in-house lawyer and real estate referral agent, and we're very grateful you've joined us. Check us out on Facebook at Rock on the Money. And the website, of course, is rockonthemoney.com. What's up, girl?
Hey, how's it going?
Living the dream, living the dream.
Yeah, I mean, it's springtime, so I'm still fighting my allergies here.
Yeah, things are gorgeous up here in Washington.
We had a week of cold, chilly temperatures just the week when my family from Wisconsin were visiting, so they thought maybe they visited the wrong Florida.
Oh, my. What are the odds?
It was like 60.
Oh, well.
But now today it's supposed to be close to 90 again.
Hold on a second. 60. That's great. That's great weather.
Yeah. It's just a little chilly.
If you're from Wisconsin, I'll take 60.
Yeah. It's just not beach or pool weather.
Oh, there you go. Hey, what are we doing on this podcast?
Today we have six social media questions from our social media group.
Awesome. And the first one happens to do with real estate, which you are a real estate referral agent.
Yes.
At ChoiceRealtyConnect.com. Here we go. If I'm saving for my first house down payment, should I use my Roth IRA?
Absolutely not.
Answer. That was an easy answer. No, we don't do that. No,
we don't touch it. Absolutely not. So your Roth IRA is your individual retirement account, not your individual savings account or individual house payment account. You know, it's for retirement and retirement alone. There are also taxes and penalties that go along with early withdrawals. Now, I know there's some kind of program for first-time home buyers, right, Craig? Right.
Yeah.
And that's probably where this question is originating from.
Or what are those pandemic rules still around where people can take money out?
You know, I don't keep up with those because they're all a terrible idea.
Yeah, you shouldn't do it anyway. That's why I don't care about either. Bottom line, it's for retirement.
So with some restrictions, you can take money from your Roth IRA to buy a home, but it's wise to exhaust other options first. Oh, yeah. You know, just because you can doesn't mean that you should. Aside from a home purchase, you can withdraw your contributions that you've made from your Roth IRA at any time for any reason, and there's no tax or penalty, right, no matter what you spend the money on or when you take the distribution. It's the gains you can't withdraw.
Exactly.
Yeah. But if it's been at least 5 years since you made your first Roth IRA contribution, then you can pull out up to $10,000 in earnings, tax and penalty free, to put towards your first home.
You said your mom listens to the podcast, and what was the one thing she learned?
Don't touch your retirement account.
Question number two.
Yeah. Well, so I think it's important, though, to kind of step this through and the explanation on why, you know.
Well, and people look at their balance, whether they get a quarterly statement, they see this money sitting there, and they want to touch it. The point is, you shouldn't touch it. If you do, you're hurting your future. You don't understand how compounding works. It's something that boggles your mind. By touching it, you're really doing so much more damage than you realize. It seems like it's only $10,000, $20,000. It actually is a lot more than that. You're just looking at the 10 or 20. Just don't touch it, please.
Yeah. I mean, and there are a lot of really good financing options out there. You know, obviously the conventional loans, most of the time, they require a 20% down payment. Right. And 20% is what's needed to avoid PMI, the private mortgage insurance, which only protects the mortgage holder, the lender, not you. So I know people hear the word insurance, they're like, yeah, I want insurance, but no, it's not for your protection. You're paying you're paying for a policy that you get zero benefit out of at any point in time. But there are some other programs out there that allow you to put down as little as 3%. So there are plenty of options out there as well. And, you know, like Craig said, if you withdraw from your retirement, you could be setting yourself back at the starting line. You know, you're missing out on gains. You have a much smaller balance to have gains apply against. And it's just not a good idea.
No, you need that money in order to keep working. It takes time to work. Give it time. Question number two. I just opened a Roth IRA with Fidelity, and I put $1,000 down. Where should I put my money to invest inside that account? Mutual funds or index funds? And which mutual funds do you guys have in your investments? Ooh.
Okay, so this is a good question because I've seen a lot of confusion lately and people trying to put Roth money into mutual funds that you've been recommending inside a specific company's 401k plan. So yes, let's not confuse the two here. A Roth IRA is an individual retirement account, and a 401k plan is something that your employer sponsors, and it's a retirement plan that you can invest up to $19,500 a year until you're a certain age, and then of course you get catch-up contributions. But the Roth IRA is something that's individual. That's the I part of the IRA. And you can put up to $6,000 per year in that. In addition, this is in addition to what you can, the $19,500 that you can put in your 401k. But the selections within each of these accounts are very different. So 401k accounts generally have a very limited selection of mutual funds to select from, and maybe sometimes a few ETFs. And that's where we're making some of these recommendations towards mutual funds that outperform the S&P 500 ETF.
Which really comes down to in your 401k, it's almost like one or two in your entire 401k.
Right. Someone at definitely HR, not the target date funds.
No. And someone at your HR, some individual at your company you work for, is the one that picked these funds. They try and put bonds and all this crap in there, but we really want to stick with the large cap funds that outperform the S&P 500 or just through the S&P 500 index fund.
Right.
That's it.
And now, so within your IRA, that's a completely individual selection, and the world is your oyster. You can select anything to invest in from your individual account, whether it's single stocks, ETFs, mutual funds. There's even some weird things you can invest in.
There's Bitcoin ETF now. This week.
There is.
Yeah, it just started this week.
Right.
But like you said, there's like 8,000 things you can get into now. But you should still start with your S&P 500 index fund. Typically, Amanda, Fidelity, Vanguard, and Schwab have a free version of that. So you could do that to start out. And then 30% of the mutual funds out there will beat the S&P 500 index. You just got to figure out which ones they are. There are a lot of great ones out there.
Yes. And I know the S&P 500 index has been having a lackluster year to date so far, but I know a few weeks ago, like a month ago, I had shared that my particular year to date earnings were up 20%. I can share now that my year to date is now -6%. So the S&P 500 index is actually outperforming my portfolio this year.
Yeah, but
even
temporary.
Though it's only like 1.6% year to date.
And as we say, it's over long term, because someone on Facebook was asking, should we still stay in these funds? I'm like, absolutely. Don't.
Yeah.
The worst thing
it's
you can do is get out.
It's been a rough month for everyone.
Absolutely. My year to date right now, I just pulled it up. I'm 30.42%.
Yeah. You and I have flip-flopped.
Yeah, but usually you're outperforming me. It's just the way tech is. I've kind of gotten out of tech a little bit, but that's the entire thing. So, but
I mean,
this could change on a dime.
It's a super bummer for me, but then, you know, perspective. I'm still, in 1 year period, I'm still up 80%, so I can't get too upset.
See, people forget about last year, how much money we made last year. Mm-hmm. We were over 100% last year. That's supposed to happen in like 10 years.
Right.
Look, guys, over time, it works out.
And again, the goal is to average 8 to 12%
right,
per year.
So we're still way ahead of the game. I appreciate they're looking at their funds. I wish they would not look. I really would. Don't look at it. Just go enjoy your life. So, and keep dumping your money in. Question number three. What are some ways of instilling gazelle intensity in an 18-year-old who doesn't feel the pain of their own debt yet? How about we explain what gazelle intensity is first? People may not be aware of where that came from.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so Dave Ramsey, which we base a lot of our information on, you know, just general financial literacy, but he uses this term gazelle intensity. You know what a gazelle is? It's an animal that just goes fast and puts everything energy into it and just. When it wants
has
to get,
because the predators are running after it.
Yeah, the loan sharks, everybody's coming after you. So that's where the gazelle intensity. So it's basically baby step two. Don't you agree, Amanda?
Yeah.
So baby step two, we have all this debt and we're like doing everything we can to earn as much money as possible and throw it at the debt. We can't do investing until we get rid of all of our debts. So we're now taking that theory back to an 18-year-old. 18-year-olds still aren't old enough to feel pain yet.
Also, I don't understand why they have debt. How does an 18-year-old have debt?
Well, one easy way is if they're going to college, that some bank thought was a good idea to give an 18-year-old $100,000 to go to college, which is the dumbest thing ever, but it happens. Right. Number two, now they're an adult. I guess they feel they can go down and buy whatever car they want. And now they have every paycheck goes right back into the car. And you can buy a car as an 18-year-old.
Yeah.
If you have a job. As long as you have a job, sign the paper because they'll come and grab that car if you don't pay it. So who knows what this is? They can get credit cards. They may have a credit card. Who knows? I mean, it's really a dangerous time in a young person's life because if they screw it up here, it could last for decades in the future between college, cars, credit cards. Well, you talked about this before on college campuses. How much do those credit card companies hit the college students? They're all over them. I mean, they're on every campus. I mean, they're hitting them. If they get them in their ecosystem early, they can't get out. So, I mean, there's so many ways of getting in debt. I mean, you can show them all the numbers you want, but it's like, well, you're just an old person. What do you know? Well, no, this is Financial Literacy 101. This is why I really want financial literacy in high school as a requirement before you can apply for any college loan, none of that stuff. Because if they knew basic financial literacy, this would not even occur, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree. But ultimately, I don't know how you instill gazelle intensity in an 18-year-old on any front, not just debt. But
yeah, I don't know how you force that into somebody.
Yeah, either they have it or they don't. I mean, all you can do is provide information.
I mean, the only other thing you could do is if you could find other people that are going through severe debt, like college debt, have them talk to them. 9 out of 10 times, they'll tell the person, don't do it.
Right.
I think you need to find the people who are in pain. If you actually go to some of these, not just our group, because our group, people really don't talk about their debts. But if you go to like some of the Dave Ramsey groups on Facebook, people are pretty open about their debts and they're paying them off and how much they're working. If you can see that, like, okay, wow, these people are really working hard. So they can get back to zero where the 18-year-old should be at zero.
Right. So yeah, you should have a clean slate to start at 18, starting your adult life. It's really scary if you've got a whole bunch of debt just out of the gate.
If you can start between 18, 21 and stay debt free at that point, your life is ahead by what? I would say 10 years. You're ahead of many other people in the United States if you can stay debt free in that time period. If you don't have the money, don't buy it. I know it seems crazy. That's crazy talk, Amanda. That's crazy talk. But if you can do that, you have no idea how far ahead you are of probably 80% of Americans if you can do that. So this is a critical time period at 18. So I'm not sure how to instill. I think it's that word, instill.
Mm-hmm.
So wish you luck, though. Hey, let's take a quick break and we'll be back with 3 more questions. You're listening to Rock on the Money.
Hey there, rock stars. Amanda here with ChoiceRealtyConnect.com. Are you about to sell your home or excited to buy your first or next home? I'll be honored to help you find an expert to work with you in your local area. At ChoiceRealtyConnect.com, I'll help match you with up to 3 qualified licensed agents that specialize in your specific market. Choice Realty Connect serves every zip code in all 50 states with a network of 15,000 top-rated agents that are ranked within the top 5% for sales. Whether you're selling or looking for a condo, new construction, retreat, vacation property, or you're a first-time home buyer, let me connect you with the perfect top agent today. ChoiceRealtyConnect.com. The choice is yours.
Amanda Braun is a Florida licensed real estate with a brokerage, Realty Connect.
Rockland, USA.
Welcome back to Rock on the Money with Amanda and Craig. You can check us out on Facebook, Rock on the Money. facebook.com/rockonthemoney is our page. And then you can join the group from there. Quiet group. Quiet group. I don't think they like opening up in there.
Craig's full of sarcasm.
Yes, I am. No. Yeah, it's interesting. But be nice if you're in there. Be nice. Be nice. It's probably not a good idea to attack the admins, just like any other group on there. Hey, question number four. Has anyone ever used Car Shield or Endurance? Those are car maintenance repair insurance companies. Or do you feel like it saves money in the long run?
So I don't, because again, as we coach, you should be putting money away in an emergency fund. So essentially you're self-insured.
Yeah.
And you're not paying premiums to our policy that you may or may not use. So that could be sunk cost, you know.
I think this is very much similar to what you said last episode about appliances, your home warranties, the things that they're going to cover based on the car in the year.
Pricing on their website. So you're going to have to get a quote, and it's based on your vehicle's type, the age, the mileage, and coverage. So of course, if you have an older car, that's when you're more likely to look into this, but that's what it's going to cost you, an arm and a leg. And probably you're probably going to outspend on insurance premiums than you would on an actual repair.
If you go by what we talk about in Consumer Reports and you buy the correct car in the first place, you can avoid many repairs.
Right.
Many repairs. Like, Amanda, I can't even tell you the last time I've been in a repair shop other than oil and tires. Right. I don't know. My cars just don't break down because I buy cars that are highly rated. It may not be the one I want. It's the one I should have. That's still nice and does what it needs to do.
Like any insurance plan, you have to carefully read the exclusions because, you know, the worst thing that can happen is you spend hundreds and thousands of dollars on insurance premiums. And then when something really does happen, your claim is denied because it's part of an exclusion. So I am in the camp. I'm against these types of extra insurance plans and warranties.
Yep. Use your emergency fund. Build up your 3 to 6 months expense emergency fund. That's where money comes from. Question number five. Ooh, I don't know if I can answer this one. For those of you that have done DoorDash, I'm thinking about doing it and earn some extra cash as a save up for a master's degree. I like that. What are some pros and cons of doing DoorDash?
So DoorDash, you know, Uber Eats, any of these delivery things are great extra side incomes. I haven't personally done it, Craig. I don't think you've personally done it, so we can't speak from experience.
No.
But I can say some of the things to take into consideration are the age of your car, you know, the wear and tear that will be put on your car. Just factor it in. It doesn't mean it's a bad idea, but factor it in.
Just like Uber, right?
Yeah, like any side business, because that's really what it is. You're an independent contractor of your own business. Like any business, there are expenses. So it's not pure profit when you get paid. And then, of course, as an independent contractor, you're responsible for your own, you know, income taxes, withholdings, all of that. And you're going to have to make sure that your car insurance covers such services, because a lot of times they do not cover if you have an accident while you're performing these types of activities.
One thing I like
unless you have the special coverage.
Right. And one thing I like to throw out to people that want to consider this, the average cost per mile of the average vehicle in America is 65 cents a mile. Okay. So factor in if you're doing these deliveries, if you're driving 10 miles for one delivery, let's say you go to and from, that's $6.50.
Right.
And that includes your insurance, oil changes, tires. It's the total cost of running an average vehicle in America. Larger vehicles are going to be more, so factor in how much your tips are, how much you're making. If you do all that, you'll realize you're really not making that much money. And ask other Uber or other DoorDash, how much are they making on average? And tell them to be honest and see how much you're really going to make.
From my understanding, a lot of the income comes from tips.
Yes, that's what I've heard as well. It depends on your area that you're delivering to, if they're apt to give you tips or not. So.
Yeah. And I absolutely love, though, the fact that this individual is ready to hustle to save for their master's degree rather than taking out additional student loans.
That was the best part. I love that. And they're looking at some way to do it to come up with the cash. I love that.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Yep, absolutely.
Question number six, how long does it take after canceling credit cards to get rid of your credit score? You know why they're asking this. Because the best credit score is what?
850.
Well, yes. However, In Dave Ramsey world,
question.
It is a trick question. The best credit score, a lot of people freak out when you tell them this. It is a trick question.
Yes.
If you want credit, the best credit score is 850, and people brag about that. If you don't need credit anymore because you're debt-free and you do cash, the best credit score is actually zero because you're not accessing credit. And I've heard it varies depending on your mortgage carrier, stuff like that. But typically, you'll see if you pay off everything and you don't have a credit card, yada, yada, yada. I heard like 6 months, you'll see that credit score plummet. I mean, literally plummet down to zero.
You're right. So the other thing about closing your credit card. So people often say, well, I don't want to close a credit card because my credit's going to take a hit. The reason it takes a hit is because you lower your available credit. And that's part of the algorithm there. Right. So the way that you close it without impacting your other score is you make sure that your credit utilization rate is zero. And that's by having the balances of all your credit cards paid off before you close that credit card.
There you go.
Yeah. So you want to make sure that balance is paid off and the balance of all your other cards before you close it if you're concerned about maintaining a high credit score. Generally, they can keep credit accounts on your credit report for many, many years, you know, like up to 10 years. So that part, you're not going to control one way or the other. So the other thing that impacts your credit score when you close an account is if you close your oldest account, because the algorithm is looking at length of credit history. So if you close your older one, it may take a hit for a few months, but you're going to bounce back. I would not obsess about your credit score being impacted from closing a credit card account. The best thing to do is ignore it and just simply close your account, because that's what's going to help you in your long-term financial future.
I do like the one aspect of this question. They really don't care about the credit score, and that's really what they need to be doing. People put way too much emphasis in their life on their credit score.
Right. And frankly, anything above like 750 is excellent anyway. And it doesn't matter 1 or 2 points or 10 points either way, as long as you're above a certain threshold, like it's not going to impact.
People start bragging, I got 820. I'm like, yeah, but it's no different than 780. They don't care. It's no different. You're in the high group, whatever.
Yeah. Once you hit the excellent threshold, it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't. Well, that was great, man. I appreciate all that time. And those are really different questions that we normally don't get. I kind of like that one. All right. Thank you, Amanda.
You can find Amanda on Instagram and Twitter at Agile Amanda. And you can find me on all of your favorite social media platforms at Rockland USA. Don't forget, check out the website and subscribe to the podcast. All the links are right there on the front page, rockonthemoney.com. Please subscribe and leave comments to our podcast on Apple, Google, Spotify, or even your favorite app that you got right there on your phone. Those help us out a lot. If you're ever looking for a specific topic or content that we've produced over time, just go to the website and in the search bar, just type in your topic, be it 401k, stimulus check, or anything, and everything comes right up for you. We have so much gratitude that you've taken the time out of your day to listen to our podcast while you're walking, driving, traveling, or whatever you're doing. Please send us an email. Let us know how you're doing out there. podcast@rocklandusa.com. So long, everybody. Thank you very much again. We'll see you again next time. America's Rockland USA. All opinions expressed by the host are solely their own and do not reflect the views of any company, affiliates, or advertisers. Investments or strategies mentioned in the show may not be suitable for you. Before acting on any information in the show, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial or investment advisor.